Hello, welcome to the 11th episode of my short lecture series on family violence and crime. I'm Dr. Hasan Bükar. In this episode, we talk about professionals and their responses to child abuse. In the previous episodes of this series, we talked about types and various aspects of child maltreatment. As you might have already recognized, in many instances of child maltreatment, either the victim are not aware of the fact that they are being abused or exploited, or they are not capable of speaking for themselves because of various reasons. Therefore, the prevention and intervention strategies about child maltreatment mostly relies on the reports and the responses of the professionals. The professionals like teachers, doctors, nurses, social workers are the ones who are the most likely to interact with children daily basis. And they are supposed to be cognizant of the signs and symptoms of abuse and neglect. In addition, they are mandated by statute in many states and countries to report their suspicion to the agencies which are responsible to further investigate and find out the facts about those suspected child abuse cases. During the investigation of these cases, many other professionals, like law enforcement officers, forensic interviewers, medical professionals, therapists, prosecutors, judges, lawyers, guardian ad litem, interact with victimized children. While those professionals are expected to be vigilant in recognizing and reporting child abuse cases, once a report is made, we want them to be sensitive to the needs of victimized children and not cause further trauma or secondary trauma while doing their jobs. In this episode, we are looking into the responsibilities of professionals dealing with child abuse cases. In the United States, many states and counties have demanded that professionals who deal with abused children become more sensitive to children's special needs and requirements. In fact, all states in the United States have enacted statutes that have a specific goal of protecting abused children by mandating the reporting of suspected child abuse cases to the authorities. And in my course, I wanted from my students to complete an interactive mandated reporter training in which they are supposed to learn the requirements and the expectations from mandated reporters in the state of Florida. But here, we will mostly talk about three major responsibilities of the professionals: reporting, criminal investigation, and especially interviewing, and intervention. In terms of reporting, as I mentioned, most states have passed legislation that contains similar characteristics that include when reporting is required, who must report, and the consequences of reporting or not reporting. For instance, these statutes apply to most professionals who might have regular contact with young children. As I mentioned at the beginning, those professionals include, but aren't limited with, physicians, nurses, social workers, teachers, psychologists or therapists in general, psychiatrists and counselors are usually covered by these laws, and they are therefore required to report cases of suspect child abuse cases. And in reporting, they must reach to a specifically named agency per the law. In every state, there's a different agency, but they usually are the social service agencies or the departments tasked with conducting the initial investigation of those alleged child abuse cases. And the reporting professionals, which are usually required to be confidential, are supposed to waive this confidential relationship or confidentiality of the information that they get from their clients. In a sense, the privilege is usually waived for purposes of reporting in those kinds of interactions, like in an interaction with a counselor or in an interaction with a doctor. So they are mandated reporters, and the requirement for confidentiality is usually waived for the child abuse cases. And the laws, those mandated reporter laws, usually establish immunity from civil lawsuits for any professional who acted in a good faith. So those professionals, according to those laws, are not supposed to conduct an effective investigation whether or not their suspicion on whether or not their suspicion has enough evidence to go forward for a real criminal investigation. They are supposed to report only when they have a reasonable suspicion about a child abuse case. And the provision for immunity is present to encourage professionals to report without fear of facing an expensive lawsuit by the parents after the incident is concluded by parents or by another party. This immunity is a defense to any civil action and allows the professional to move for dismissal of the lawsuit at an early stage in the proceedings. And another important issue about mandated reporters that the most statutes establish both civil and criminal penalties for failing to report suspected child abuse cases. So while on the one hand, they are protected from civil lawsuits, if they fail to report, they will face criminal penalties per those laws in many states. The second important responsibility of the professionals about child abuse cases is to conduct an effective investigation. Those investigations might be about intervention strategies, about which we will be talking later on. But at this time, I want to talk about criminal investigations. An essential part of criminal investigation, different from other investigations, is to conduct an effective interviewing with the victims. Because in most of the cases, a statement given by a child victim can be the only evidence that can be used during the judicial procedures. As we discussed before, in most of the, especially the sexual abuse cases, it's really hard to find a physical evidence that can be used to prove that there was a rape or there was a sexual intercourse. So the questions asked, the environment in which the interview is conducted, and the motives of the interviewer could have a direct impact on any court intervention. And all professionals must keep in mind that their actions will be reviewed and judged by others who have not had their training or expertise. So this is why this interviewing of the child victims should be done by specifically trained professionals. In the recent years, in many states and jurisdictions, there are children's advocacy centers in which a professionally designed forensic interviewing procedure is implemented to gain reliable information, to collect reliable information from child victims, and to present that information in a sound manner to the judges and the jurors during an adjudication process. And today, one of the most commonly raised issues in child abuse cases is the validity of those out-of-court interviews. And in some instances, charges are levied against professionals that suggestions or memories have been planted in impressionable young minds. And there is quite an important literature about the minds of children and how they can be induced some information or they can be shaped through special tactics that can be used during interviews, like with the closed-ended questions or limited options posed to the children when asking certain questions. So not to be questioned or not to be eliminated in an adjudication process, the professionals should rely on specifically trained in forensic interviewers if they need to ask questions to a child about an alleged abuse case. And interviewers might be accused of being biased and unprofessional if they are not following those well-established procedures. And defense attorneys will further claim that the interviewer has brainwashed or tainted the recollection of the child, and therefore that the victim's testimony, which, as I mentioned before, can be the only evidence against the suspect, should be considered untrustworthy. That's one of the most important challenges faced by the prosecutorial agencies in investigating and prosecuting child abuse cases. As any professional knows, children are not small adults. They have different perceptions, abilities, and needs than adults, and understanding how children react to events is critical in conducting a valid interview. And unfortunately, some detectives, some law enforcement officers might think that interviewing a child is just like interviewing an adult victim. Unfortunately, that's not the case. As I've just mentioned, interviewing a child requires following certain procedures, especially because we have limited evidence to prove a case against a suspect in child abuse cases. So this is why the interview is called forensic interview and needs to follow a special procedure, scientifically proven, reliable procedure, which is going to be acceptable before the court as an evidence. There are several other reasons for why untrained professionals should not question or interview children, like causing further trauma or causing this child to recant or not to cooperate any further at the later stages of the investigation. All in all, I can say that if there is a case of child abuse, the interview should be done by specifically trained forensic interviewers. They can be located in the United States, and most of the times they are located in children's advocacy centers, which are considered to be unbiased, third-party, independent agencies, which increase their credibility. But in some law enforcement agencies, there are also specifically trained forensic interviewers who can also conduct this interview and record that interview to be presented to the court during the adjudication process. Another important aspect of that forensic interviewing is to do it once and all. That means that the victim will not be questioned over and over about the incident, which has, a proven adverse impact on the child's well-being, but it also impacts the credibility of the victim before the court, because the children can normally forget what they said in a previous statement, and they can explain the case in a different way when they are asked again, which eventually will cause questions in the minds of jurors or the judges when the case comes before the court. And the last general responsibility of professionals in child abuse cases is to intervention. And the goal of intervention is to protect the child from further abuse. And the child's safety and health must be the overriding issue in any decision to intervene. The child's future safety and well-being must also be considered in evaluating the type of intervention. For instance, to decide to remove a child from a family should be taken very seriously. And any decision to intervene should also consider that children need positive parenting models after which they can bond and model their actions. So in this example, for instance, once a child needs to be removed from a family house, one of the important considerations is whether the current parents can set a good model for the children and create a role model for their future actions. At a certain point, a professional will make a decision to inject himself or herself into the family to protect the child. And this decision, as I mentioned, should be taken seriously and should be done after a thorough investigation. In this case, the investigation is about the child protection measures, not necessarily for the criminal investigation. And when doing such as child protection investigation, professionals try to maintain a delicate balance between the parents' rights to raise a child without interference and the society's obligation to protect those who cannot speak for themselves. And we know this is mostly because A professional may disagree with a certain type of lifestyle, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the official can intrude into the family without facts that indicate that the child is in danger of neglect or physical or sexual abuse. And as I mentioned, this decision has to be made after a thorough investigation involving medical professionals, law enforcement officers, social workers, and the environment and the people in the environment of this child, like other family members, or the neighbors or teachers, or the other experts who might have information about the child and the family. So, and you know, in conclusion, we can say this intervention process requires a thorough investigation and a court hearing, and if the nature of abuse is serious, it can also entail civil and criminal actions against the parents. And the courts who are supposed to make that decision have all the powers to maintain the well-being of the child. That's the ultimate goal during that process. So thank you for listening to the 11th episode of my series, and I will be meeting you in the next episode. Thank you and stay safe. Thank you.